This is Rabbi Sharon Brous, Rabbi at Ikar, where we're dedicated to reinvigorating Jewish community, ritual, and learning, all while laying the foundation for a just and loving society. You're listening to Ikar's podcast, where you can hear our sermons from Shabbat and holidays, our teachings, our guest speakers, basically anything we think worth hearing that we can capture and stream, you can listen to right here. The whole Megillah. I mean, literally, the whole Megillah. So thank you so much for being with us.
I like when you get the pshh before you've even said anything. Feels good. It's the announcements. There are 5,039 different rabbis named in the Talmud, and there are half as many pages. In other words, no shortage of rabbis offering their teachings and interpretations in this great compendium of wisdom. Now, to be clear, they don't all get the same airtime. We've heard of the greats, Hillel and Shammai, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael, the list goes on. Their teachings define so many of the core conversations and debates throughout the entirety of the Talmud. Their rulings still define what Jewish life looks like for us today. So it caught my eye when I encountered a teaching in the Talmud this week, which essentially asks, who is an example of a great teacher? A teacher who, quote, inspires their students to righteousness, who helps them shine like the stars. And the answer given by the Talmud is Rav Shmuel Bar Shilat. Who? Exactly. But at least the Talmud tells us why this rabbi is the ultimate teacher. His greatness comes from the fact, the Talmud reports, that even when he's not with his students, he's thinking about his students. He carries them in his heart wherever he goes. They are a part of him, and concern for their well-being is woven into every part of his life. That, the Talmud believes, is what makes a teacher extraordinary. I'm actually quite moved by this description, and I'm so blessed to have teachers like this, who never stop caring and worrying and praying and loving their students. But what an incredible move by the Talmud to name as the teacher par excellence a rabbi who doesn't, to my knowledge, have a single teaching in the Talmud solely attributed to his name. So once again, who is Rav Shmuel Bar Shilat? Of course, before I answer this question, I need to talk for 10 minutes about something else. So hang tight. I think it'll add to our appreciation of where I'm going. All right, let's talk about the Megillah. The Purim story that, of course, we're reading this evening. The pivotal moment of the Megillah, Rabbi Tzadok talked about this earlier, comes in chapter 4. The murderous decree against the Jews has been signed and sealed. Mordechai has shed his clothing for sackcloth and ashes. His grieving has begun. Desperate, he approaches the palace in hopes that Esther will find a way to avert the decree. And his strategy is multifaceted. In just 2 verses of text, Mordechai makes 4 arguments. In the framing of Dr. Erica Brown, they are the argument of unity, of posterity, of history, and then finally of uncertainty. It's the last, less an argument than a question, that I believe spurs Esther into the action that ultimately saves our people. Mi yodea im le'et kazot higat l'malchut. Who knows? Perhaps it's for a moment like this that you attained the royal position. Mi yodea. Who knows? A question born from the collision of uncertainty and possibility, a question that shakes the listener from a posture of resignation and inevitability, a question that reopens the door that was imagined as closed. Who knows? Asks us to relinquish a sense of certainty, to let go of that pattern of thinking where we think we know what will happen before it has happened, where we think we know who you'll be tomorrow before you've lived today. Mi yodea. Who knows, Esther? Consider the possibility that the outcome of this story is far from predetermined, and it's stepping into your power, your responsibility, that will shift everything. This isn't "who knows" with a shrug and an abdication of responsibility. This is an admission of uncertainty that demands courage and imagination. Because certainty is deceptive. It's from a place of uncertainty that you'll see a horizon filled with expanding possibilities. That you'll imagine different outcomes and new roles to play in manifesting them. Paths that can only be imagined when humility and hope take the place of hubris and resignation. With these two words, Purim becomes the holiday of generative uncertainty. It becomes a test case of a world without foregone conclusions, a reset of any assumptions that limit the expansive possibilities of becoming. The rabbis famously teach in the Talmud that on Purim we try to move to a state of alternate consciousness, ad dilo yada. This isn't about substances, about getting so drunk that everything is a blur. And I don't think it's really about negating the difference between good and bad. Get to a point, ad dilo yada, literally, where you don't know. Get to a point where you can relinquish your certainty. Live for a day without all the answers, without all the assumptions about each other that cast a giant shadow over how we relate to one another. Who knows what kind of humanity might emerge from such a day, from such a world? This is the logic, I believe, of the masks and the costumes, the physical changes that allow us to inhabit these different identities. For a moment, we're not sure who we're looking at and who's looking at me. Concealed identities emerge into the foreground, and we see new angles of people we thought we knew. But even more powerful is how this theme plays out in the laws of Purim, in the specific instructions about matanot le'evyonim, gifts to the poor. You might think there's nothing special about this commandment. Are we not always instructed to give tzedakah, to hold as sacred the insecurity of the needy? But listen closely to the difference between tzedakah on Purim and tzedakah on the rest of the year. The Shulchan Aruch, 16th century code of Jewish law, poses the following question about tzedakah year-round. Must one give money to anyone who asks for charity? This question strikes at the core of so many of the painful ethical dilemmas connected to tzedakah. The allocation of resources, the trustworthiness of the recipient, the effectiveness of direct giving versus supporting the social net, the dignity of all involved. The Shulchan Aruch responds, if someone says, give me clothes, we investigate to see that their need is legitimate. Therefore, a person is not obligated to give charity to all who ask. But now listen to the shift when discussing Purim. However, the Shulchan Aruch continues, money given on Purim is distributed freely, and therefore one should give at least a small donation to anyone who extends their hand. Kol mi sheposhet yado. In other words, tonight through tomorrow night, we're being instructed to fill our pockets with money and food and give them away freely to anyone who asks. For the rest of the year, we chase certainty. Is this person's need legitimate? Are they trustworthy? Do they look like they really need it? Not on Purim. Mi yodea. Who knows? I don't know what you really need, but you're asking, so I'm giving. Who knows what happened to you this morning? How you got here, what it feels like for you to extend your hand. Who knows what blessing might grow from this encounter, how you or I might be changed forever. On Purim, we lean into the kind of not knowing that spurs generosity that questions how our assumptions, our judgments, limit what could be possible. In an astonishing text in the Talmud, Mi Yodea ripples beyond the palace, beyond the laws of Purim, into the most radical expression of where uncertainty meets possibility. Haman, we learn in the opening verse of chapter 3, is a descendant of Amalek. These are the people we just read in today's Matir Torah reading who attacked the Israelites on their journey into the wilderness, who preyed on the weak when we were tired and weary. These are the people whose memory we are commanded to blot out. They are our sworn and eternal enemies, afflicting us in the time of Esther, just as they afflicted us in the time of the wilderness. They are beyond redemption, beyond reconciliation. Or so it would seem, until we encounter in the pages of the Talmud a most surprising twist. Mivnei banav shel Haman lamdu Torah bifnei Brak. From the descendants of Haman were those who studied Torah in Bnei Brak. The great grandchildren of Haman have ceased to be our enemy. Let that sink in. And it's more than that. They've become Torah scholars, sitting at the table with Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, telling our story, writing our story, teaching our story. How could that be? Aren't these the people who will always hate us, whose memory we're meant to obliterate? I thought we knew who they were. Mi yodea. Who knows? Maybe there's nothing inevitable about hatred. Maybe there's no guarantee that we have to be enemies forever. Who are you? Once I let go of the certainty that clogs my willingness to listen. Who are you? Once I stop answering that question for you. The Talmud's answer? You are Rav Shmuel Bar Shilat, descendant of Haman, who studied Torah in Bnei Brak, who became the greatest teacher. The one who thought about his students, even when he was apart from them. The one who never stopped caring and loving and praying for his students. The one who opened his heart again and again. There's always so much more to the story. So many possibilities beyond what's already been written, beyond the future we've already determined. There's opportunity within uncertainty to see one another in a new light, to be who you are called to be. Mi yodea im le'et kazot higat l'malchut. Who knows? Perhaps it's for a moment like this that you are here. Shabbat shalom.
Hi, it's Rabbi Brous again. Thank you so much for listening. Want more content like this? I hope you'll subscribe. And please consider making a contribution to IKAR so we can continue to work toward the fulfillment of our mission to reanimate Jewish life, to embody moral courage, to nurture the spirit, and to work to decipher what it means to be a human being in the world today. Visit our website at IKAR.org. That's IKAR.org. And I hope to see you, maybe even in person, sometime soon.